This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Dowling. Our guest this week is Tim Lust, CEO of the National Sorghum Producers. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Tim Lust next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 530 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The National Sorghum Producers are preparing to celebrate their 70th anniversary. Like many cooperatives and other commodity organizations, Tim Lust, CEO of the group, says farmers came together for a common theme of improving the outlook for their crop and their farms.
You know, that's one of the interesting things as you look back over seven decades and all of the volunteer leaders and you know, when you look at the milestones and, you know, different aspects of what has been done, you know, you see just a lot of differences. And then when you look at farm policy, you go back and read, you know, some of the historical documents of the organization. And a whole lot of the facts. I mean, the organization was founded by five farmers in 1955 because sorghum wasn't a part of farm programs, and farm programs were starting to become important. So I would say that, you know, that was an issue, from day one, and it's certainly still an issue today. So, really interesting to look back and see, you know, some of the challenges related to farm policy and insurance and some of those items that have been around a long time. Trade policy, certainly one that's been around a long time, with new twists. Obviously, renewable fuels is something, that's hugely important to us today that certainly wasn't a part of some of those early discussions. So, a good mixture, but when you look at a long legacy, grower-led, leadership and continuing to speak with credibility on behalf of growers and try to work to increase our industry's profitability, certainly that mission has not and will not change.
So if we look at issues top of the order, and I'm thinking about farm policy as you brought that up, we saw a major change in farm programs when the Freedom to Farm came in to be what is now so many years ago. It took away a lot of the shackles that farm policy had on producers. And it freed you up to be able to make choices to produce for a market, but it was also dependent upon a market. And right now, I don't think there is a row crop in the U.S. that's not facing a challenge of not being able to sell to global customers.
You know, I think as you look back at different time periods in history, you know, certainly we have had market time periods where there were challenges in terms of production increases and market demand keeping up. And when we look today, certainly we're in one of those times where unfortunately, we continue to produce. And from a market standpoint, we don't have enough markets to take product in many cases. And certainly, the cost of production in order to do that today, has radically changed. And I would agree with you when we look across all commodities, not just sorghum, extremely challenging time. And I know that, ABA and Farmer Mac recently, came out with a survey that basically say they expect, you know, half the producers to not make a profit in 2025. Certainly, even as a low cost, commodity, we are blessed this year that we're having some tremendous yields across, some of our segments. But, you know, we're challenged and, you know, for one of the first times in my career, storage is usually not a problem for sorghum. You can always put it on the ground. You can always do things with it and, you know, just serious storage issues this year. So certainly complex situation that policy is trying to, needs to address.
If we're talking about the global market, Tim, is it only tariffs or are there other challenges that have exacerbated the situation that the U.S. sorghum industry is in right now?
certainly uncertainty, economic uncertainty around the world is a challenge. I think certainly we have had excellent crops around the world for several years in a row. So there's some of those macro things that are there that certainly underlie issues. Certainly, I think from the U.S. standpoint, an ability to trade with some of our key customers over the last year has certainly had impacts that lead into that as well.
What did sorghum producers receive in H.R. 1 and what now is in another extension of the 2018 Farm Bill that assists you, but at the same time, what do you still lack?
I think for the first time in many years, a unique opportunity to really update farm policy and put the dollars back in that were needed. From our industry's case, moving a reference price from $3.95 to $4.40, but then kind of in the fine print on how effective reference prices work. For us, that actually moves up to a $4.67 number because our prices have actually averaged above that $4.40 reference price for the last several years. And so from that standpoint, significant increase in policy to help put some safety back in the safety net. As one of our past chair repeatedly said in conversations leading up to the Farm Bill, feels like we're falling and the safety net's 2 inches above a concrete floor and not much of a safety net. And so this gets some safety net back in there, moving our loan rates from 220 up to 242. Again, not something that you want to actually sell at loan rates, but just for financing purposes primarily, certainly something that helps there. So, those are specific commodity policy items that are important and very helpful. Obviously, taking a number of conservation dollars that had been added and securing those as part of the baseline to have those additional CSP and EQIP dollars going forward is certainly something that is very important to our growers and a key part of the safety net. So when you look at kind of those cornerstone issues in farm policy, crop insurance, I didn't mention, but obviously a huge cornerstone in policy, the items there, the good news is you got a lot of the cornerstone pieces that are there. The bad news is that's not very many pieces of the overall farm bill. There's a whole lot of extra pages that still have to be done, and those are the things that still remain very important to us when we look at things like research title that are never get the credit that they probably should, but still remain important to industries like ours and a number of other titles that would fall in that same scope that may not be the cornerstone items, but certainly are very important for an overall farm policy package that we call a farm bill.
Tim, what's the status of the sorghum producer? And I can't ask you to speak on behalf of other commodities, but where do you feel like you rank among other commodities? And is there a need among your grower group for financial assistance during this challenging time?
I'll start big picture and then come back. I think when we talk about agriculture and farmers, we talk about working capital is shrinking. We talk about carryover debt is rising. We talk about more and more farmers that are, talking about how do they get off farm jobs and statements, frankly, that I haven't heard since I was, a high school kid on the farm in the 80s. So I think from a big picture standpoint, absolutely sobering in terms of where that's at. From the sorghum industry standpoint, it's trade-off. On one hand, we tend to have lower cost of production, and so our costs are a little lower, and that's a positive thing. On the flip side of that, lack of markets and a very large crop this year, certainly we're seeing the stress of prices, and that's not helping. So continues to be a very serious issue. And, while we talked about policy and HR 1 and all of the benefits of that, we're not there yet. We're a year away from being under that policy practically from a cash flow standpoint for farmers. So from that standpoint, yes, we're back to relying, unfortunately, on payments and not a position. You know, our board repeatedly says we want dollars from the market. But the reality is that's not there right now. And in order to keep families from going bankrupt and continuing to lose a generation of farmers, particularly those young farmers that are so important when we look at the age of American farmers overall, losing our young farmers is so important that we don't do that. And so, yes, I mean, we have advocated that, unfortunately, while we need markets and while we need trade around the world, we also need help now. So certainly have heard the administration talk about those, and now maybe looks like this week maybe that slowed down a bit. But from our industry standpoint, certainly still significant challenges as we continue to operate below cost of production.
Tim, I spoke to a friend of mine, and I'm talking about corn here, but he mentioned his first crop was 26 years ago raising corn, and an acre of corn was less than $200 an acre for inputs, and he said this year it's over $900. Is that a similar story for what sorghum producers are experiencing, and where do you stand with regard to the investigation from USDA, Department of Justice, and others that are diving into why these input prices are so high?
While our cost of production is lower than what you mentioned, the percentages have changed in the same manner. I mean, just, you know, we've seen doubling, and particularly even in the last 5 or 6 years, just incredible increases in cost of production in the last 6 years. There's two things from a profitability standpoint you can do, and you know, you can work on the sale and the revenue side of it, and most of our groups have spent our career trying to work on market development and trying to open markets around the world and look at those things. The other side of it is costs, and I think you've heard a number of farm groups talk more and more and more about costs, and now I think you hear the government talking more and more about the cost side of it. Is it simple? No. But I think you cannot hide from the fact that the costs have been substantial, probably for a multitude of reasons, but I don't think it's inappropriate to look at those and evaluate what and why and see where that is, because we are in a global market. We have to compete against other countries around the world. And if we have gotten ourselves into a situation, for many, many years, I think U.S. farm policy was based upon the fact that we were the low-cost producer in the world. And certainly, I don't think we can make that statement today. And so I think that it has a lot of repercussions throughout the economy, throughout agriculture. So I think it's appropriate that we take some time to look at that and just see what's there.
You know, we had Corey Rosenbusch on this same program and with the Fertilizer Institute, and he mentioned the obstacles that they're facing that they can't control. And obviously geopolitical concerns and economic concerns, they're facing some things that are causing them heartburn, if you will, and pushing their prices up. But still, the farmer is a price taker. And the assistance that may go out will go through the farmer's hand and back into industry and back into land and to other areas. And the question is, why? Why is the situation as such?
Well, I'd just be the first to say this is not simple. And anybody that says that, you know, in international trade on inputs and exports is simple hasn't been in the middle of it. So it's not simple. But just because it's not simple doesn't mean we shouldn't take a look and see, are there things that can be done? We do that from a policy standpoint on a very regular basis in the country. And so I think it makes sense that, you know, we have some mechanism or some way to look at and see what is possible. Maybe there's only one or two areas that we can fix, but, you know, if one or two areas amount to 2 or 3% lower cost of production, That's 2 or 3% lower cost of production for our growers in the United States, and that is important.
U.S. Grains Council now has bioproducts in their title. What role does renewable fuel play in the sorghum producer's future? And with that, how important the decisions by the EPA and the decisions by the Congress to decide the fuel policy of the nation moving forward?
Well, it's extremely important to sorghum. When we look at it, it is by far our largest domestic market and just a dominant domestic market for us. And long-term average for the last 20 years, you know, it's always been a third of our industry. But, you know, on years like 2025, you know, that moves to two-thirds of our usage. And so certainly extremely important to us. We are closely watching what Treasury is doing in regards to the 45Z rules, and those are something certainly that provide a great opportunity for sorghum as well. But, you know, that's one of those things that, unfortunately, I've been around long enough to call a spade a spade. And, you know, unfortunately, if I'd have done this interview a year ago, I would have talked about, you know, what we would have early in 2025. And now I'm talking about what we'll have early in 2026. And so we need to get to a finish line there. We need to quit talking about that and have it be something that provides value on the farm level. In terms of that, obviously the other huge one, for us that we've been so close to collectively and, you know, and just can't say enough about the other, commodity organizations and the ethanol organizations of all the work that's been done. But yet we still don't have E15. And, so, you know, certainly, big pushes continue to go on there. And certainly, we continue to be very supportive of finding a way, to get that done. And, it's certainly important for us to continue to invest back in the United States and back in, value added here in the United States. And certainly that is one of the fastest and best ways that we believe that that could be done for our industry.
There is a battle every year for acreage. And in this financial situation that we're in and the question of global markets and domestic markets, it leaves farmers in a lurch now as they're making decisions for 26 for what acres they'll plant and for what happens in their operations in generations to come of which crops they're going to raise.
Absolutely. We are in competition every single year. And, you know, as one of those commodities that doesn't have, 90 million acres, you know, when we start talking about this price impact could, you know, have a million acre impact, a million acre impact when you have 6 million acres is huge. And so certainly, we worry about that. We worry about that is its impact on infrastructure. We've seen losses of elevators. Once you lose that infrastructure, you almost never get it back. We have real concerns about where that ties in. And certainly something that we're concerned about.
Let's talk about the global market. You sell product overseas. How has the tariff situation impacted you? And what are the things that sorghum producers need now from this administration?
Just from a size and scope standpoint, it's not a secret. It's public. It's the facts. I mean, there was an excellent article published even this morning on it talking about, you know, over the last 10 years, around 5 million metric tons of sorghum's gone to China. And when we look at this year, we're down 97% on exports. So certainly that is significant, and excited about the opportunity for tariffs to come off here recently. But, you know, we still have to work to see the grain flow and the grain move and to get back to those regular patterns. Certainly from an international standpoint, been a tremendous amount of work. I serve on one of the ATAC, the trade advisory committees, and certainly just been a tremendous amount of work on many, many countries around the world in trying to open up trade agreements. And when we look at our commodity, you know, not only do we have, you know, tariffs at certain levels around the world, but we still have many countries that have, non-tariff barriers, phytosanitary barriers that just don't allow our product in. So tremendous opportunity still out there to open up U.S. agriculture and allow us to go to more places than we do today. But those are long, in many cases, long negotiations and, you know, excited to see a lot of push and a lot of effort to get that done, and excited to see the progress that's been made, but then still have to get many of those deals across the finish line. And so certainly know the challenges that are there of getting that done as somebody that's been involved in trade policy for a long time.
The president spent quite a bit of time in Asia and wrapped it up with that meeting in China. And there was the touting of a deal, but very few details. And now that that meeting is over, very little, if any, follow through at all. Deputy Secretary Vaden said he still feels that the Chinese will follow through and that it's not good for a country to go against what they agreed with our president. But at the same time, those boats aren't leaving the U.S. with U.S. commodities headed for what's been our top customer.
We continue to wait and watch daily, hoping to hear of those big sales. And while I know some of the other commodities, there's challenges with extra stocks. We don't believe there are in our case. We believe that there's not a lot of stocks on the other side, and that there is a need. So we're hopeful, but as you mentioned, we're still waiting. We don't have that action yet.
Over a period of time, instead of negotiating multilateral agreements, it appears that more and more of our trade negotiations are one-to-one. Has that been a plus, or is that a challenge from your perspective in terms of opening markets and finding opportunities?
You know, I think, like I said, I've been around a long time, and I've seen a lot of these agreements. As you add more and more countries into it, you get less and less done, and it takes longer and longer. And so, you know, I do think working with individual countries and working through deals is positive. You can take a lot of the low-hanging fruit and a lot of items and just get them resolved quickly. So certainly think that is good. I think from our industry's case, you know, there are a number of countries that either things have already been negotiated on, or you know, we know there's been a lot of work done on agreements that aren't announced yet and aren't finalized yet, but there's been a lot of progress made. So certainly, you know, when we look at Southeast Asia in particular, just a lot of opportunities there on what can be done with individual countries. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's challenging to get across the finish line and get those announced and to be able to see the trade move. But it's rewarding. You know, I remember having this same conversation for many, many years early in my career about China and sorghum. And then, you know, finally 10 years ago, that door opened, and certainly we saw what it could be. So by the same token, you know, look, for us, long-term markets are very important. I just came back from Mexico City and being involved in the trade delegation down there, and Mexico's been a long-term customer for U.S. sorghum, and a good one, and certainly one that is important to us from a rail and logistics standpoint. You know, work exceptionally well into Mexico. And so, you know, it's that mixture. It can't be one. It's got to be that mixture of countries around the world that can take your products and want to take your products and continue to build from there.
Water is a bigger issue for more commodities in a larger geography today than I think it's ever been before. What's been the sorghum producers' work on water policy, and how do you see that expanding?
We've been involved in water long before it was cool. It's cool to be involved in water policy now. We've been there for many years because of where our base is and of the water challenges that are there. A huge portion of our industry sits over the Ogallala Aquifer, and we continue to see the declines in the Ogallala Aquifer and many areas. You know, just personally, my family has over a area of the aquifer that when I was a child was tremendous irrigated production, and today many of those acres are dry land. We have seen radical changes in terms of what that is, so we continue to be involved. While it is a local issue in many states and in just the way water policy works, you know, we continue to see it bleed more and more into state discussions and even into national discussions. So it is something that is complex, but is very important. And certainly from a sorghum industry standpoint, we have got a valuable role to play in that, whether it's on the grain side or, most importantly for us, where we see massive growth today is on the sorghum silage forage side of our ability to use less water in producing forages for the beef and dairy industries.
Well, Tim Les, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Happy anniversary, 70 years of the National Sorghum Producers. You've been here before, and you know you get the last word today.
Well, as we celebrate that 70th, just want to say, we know sorghum farmers have weathered a lot over those years, and we believe that true success really is when we see ships moving and grain flowing from U.S. farms to our customers in China and around the world.
Our thanks to Tim Lust, CEO of the National Sorghum Producers. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.